Small world, big data.
You can't teach somebody to show up on time. You can't teach somebody to be honest. You can't teach them to stay calm. You can't teach them to work well in a team environment. And vets have skill sets that I think are extremely important in the security area.
Hi, Mike Matzer with Small World Big Data, and I've got Warren Avery, the chief editor of the IT Weekly newsletter, here with us today. Welcome, Warren.
Hey, Mike, as always, it's nice to see you. We've moved down from Pine Top. We're back down into the city of Phoenix, and it was cold this morning, 40 degrees here in Phoenix.
Wow, that is getting down there. You might have snow next down there.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know what we'd do if we had snow in Phoenix. It'd probably take us two buckets of sand to revive us. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Does anybody even own a snow shovel out there?
We don't know what snow shovels are. We didn't know. I grew up in Tucson, and I remember my dad waking all of us boys up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go out in the backyard and see snow. We had never seen snow. We had like 1 inch. And so he woke us all up and we went out there and played in the snow for a couple hours.
We had a nice little backyard campfire in our fire pit the other night up here in New England. It's got these crisp, bug-free nights with clear skies. It's pretty cool. Stars and marshmallows and that.
Ah, cool.
You know, Warren, I'd heard that you were talking to a friend of yours this week about some of the priorities that they're seeing. Tell us about that.
I have breakfast with a guy that I've known for 20 years, and he's probably one of the two smartest guys that I know in the business.
And I'm the other one, right?
Absolutely. You're right up there in the top. We won't go there. But anyway, I was talking to him, and I thought we were talking about what keeps CIOs up at night. And he was saying that based on his company, the top three areas of sales for last quarter, number one was networking, which was based on working from home. Second was storage. And third was security. I thought that security would be the number one. And
he said, I would have thought it would be a big spender too. Yeah,
exactly. And he made an interesting statement. He said that if money were not an object, they could solve the ransomware and phishing problem tomorrow. The problem is that for a company to solve that would take at least $2 million. And so what they'll do is they'll wait till they get hit with ransomware or phishing, and then guess who pays for it? The insurance company ends up giving them the $2 million. So they can't go to their budget and put a $2 million line item in because budgets are going down, and it's basically based on COVID. All businesses are down, and so budgets are being cut, and the security budget is being cut. So number one was network, number two was storage, number three was security. Absolutely flabbergasted when we had that discussion this morning.
I mean, I do understand the spend on networking and end-user computing services given this digital diaspora we've all been doing. But part of that spend, I don't know how the line items shake out, should be on secure networking, and security should be a big part of that too. So very interesting to hear that it's just the networking part. I wanted to mention also, last week we had Mark Sangster on. We've just posted his full interview if you're interested as a bonus episode. So check that out. Check out his new book. If you go to smallworldbigdata.com, Tech Top 6 Podcasts, if you find the podcast there, there's actually a link to get his book free in PDF format. So go check that out. It's all about ransomware and digital cyber crimes. Pretty cool. And then the final part here, Warren, the question last week we had was about subscriptions, IT subscriptions. We talked about IT cloud subscription costs going up. What's been your sort of experience with subscription usage in IT?
For me, as a publisher of the IT Weekly newsletter, I don't like it when somebody has to go and subscribe to something because, you know, once you subscribe to something, you're going to get tons and tons of marketing. So from an IT Weekly newsletter standpoint, we typically don't publish anything that needs a subscription, only because I know my best record, from the time I put in a subscription, I got a sales call 20 minutes later. You know, if I put it in, I'm going to get sales calls. So I just blocked that number. But, you know, that's just the way the IT Weekly newsletter works.
All right. So we're going to add to the ongoing cost of subscriptions that aren't free. We're going to add to that the idea that you are opening yourself up to just being upsold. or market
exactly.
it to, right?
It's the old adage, if you don't pay for it, you're the product.
Because I see that a lot of times with people, even if we translate that to subscribing to some instances of on Amazon or, you know, the storage in Amazon, I see them every day, even for this podcast, coming back and saying, would you like to upgrade that storage to something a little bit more secure? Would you like to upgrade that storage to something that's more replicated? Would you like to upgrade that to something that's more available? And it's like, you just keep getting this upsold part. Really, it's a story of OpEx versus CapEx. And the idea a couple of years ago with everyone getting excited about cloud is I've had these huge CapEx spikes that are hard to budget and go get approval for. But if I smooth that out into a little bit of OpEx every year, it's okay. And it's plannable. But now I think the chickens are coming home to roost on that.
I think so. Yep. OpEx is always a deductible expense, where CapEx, you have to spread it over 5 or 6, 7 years or whatever your depreciation schedule is.
But that CapEx depreciation then was actually more predictable than what your OpEx subscription is over the next 5 years. So I'm not sure about that predictability. Anyway.
Yep.
Related to that, actually, is our first article that you brought along here, first of six. So here at the Tech Top 6, we look at the 6 handpicked articles Warren brings out of the entire IT Weekly newsletter for the week. This first article is looking at IT measurement, actually. And are companies measuring the right things to understand how their IT is doing?
No, I don't think so, Mike. It's an article out of Enterprisers Project. It's called IT Metrics, 5 Measurement Stakes to Avoid. And companies still concentrate on measuring things and not outcomes. And to give you just a real world experience, I was in sales for probably 30 years, and I can't tell you the number of companies that you had to make X number of calls a day. And I can never get them to understand that if you made, you know, 5 calls with 3 sales was a lot better than making 20 calls with no sales. So companies somehow measure the wrong things. And so what he's talking about is the number one on their list is focus on the outcome, not the actual process. Key performance indexes, SLAs, every metric you're doing should be measuring how your users are perceiving the service you answer. He gave a great example of what he calls a watermelon effect. Management sees the outside of the watermelon as all green. All the KPIs are green. You break it open and it's red. Every user hates the service you're delivering. So be careful of the watermelon effect. Don't discourage negative feedback. You said a lot of times you only want positive feedbacks, and you don't know what you're doing wrong until you get that feedback. So you got to get that negative feedback. He says also beware of designing metrics to look good to management. The only true measurement is how your end users perceive the service. And also, don't use sanctions, use incentives. He said if you only punish bad news, people are going to stay away from it. And one of the hardest things to quantify is a sentiment. How are your end users actually perceiving the service? And I had a boss one time who, whenever he would go visit a company, he would go into the bathroom and look at the bathroom stalls and see what was written on the back of the door. He said, there is a true indication. And if you go into a bathroom and you see all sorts of negative comments, that was a big red flag for him. So as the old saying goes, you can't improve what you can't measure. Just be sure you're measuring the right thing. So good article about KPIs and SLAs and all that other stuff.
What's interesting is we still have to say in this day and age, you need to measure outcomes versus measuring the output, right? It's just so easy for people to find the easy measurement and then base their management strategy on that, even if that easy measurement isn't related to the business outcome that they're trying to achieve.
Exactly.
Right. You really need to work that extra mile into it if you have to translate those measurements of easy outputs and do something to make them more related and correlated with your outcome. Otherwise, you're working towards the wrong green light, which is why everything looks like a watermelon, which is also actually the keyword Warren's put on this article today is watermelon. If you just put in SLA, you'll get 68 articles. KPI probably can get you more. And if you want to read all about carrots versus sticks and feeling what's important, check out watermelon. Pretty cool. Next article is talking about, I don't know, Warren, this is kind of in the theory of management again, but data science. Every time we talk about data science, technically we get into the math, we get into the weeds of machine learning and everything else, but there are definitely some soft skills that go with data science. And you've got an article here that might talk about what the importance are of soft skills and maybe which soft skills might be more important and relevant to data science, right?
Yep. It's an article out of KD Nuggets. It's called Essential Data Science Skills That No One Talks About. And it's from Michael Kolominkin, who's a data science team leader at Playtika. And we tend to think of data scientists as the absent-minded professors in their white coats. It's like Christopher Lloyd's character, Dr. Emmett Brown in Back to the Future, or Gene Wilder in Young Frankenstein, or Frankenstein, as he called it.
Frankenstein,
you know. But there are certain soft skills. He said simplicity is one. He said, make sure your codes and your models are simple, but not simplistic. And as the old saying goes, you reach perfection not when there's nothing to add, but when there's nothing to remove. Robustness. Make sure that your assumptions aren't incorrect. Take a breath, but continue to code. And always add a safety margin in. Prepare for the unexpected. And he says, as always, test, 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 and always assume that your models have bugs. And also, don't use unproven comments. You're building on sand if you're using something that doesn't work. Modularity, divide and conquer. Dig down to the smallest problem and then find an open source solution to solve it. And he said, don't try to eat the elephant in one bite. Okay. And wherever possible, use what's called COTS, commercial off-the-shelf software, wherever possible. And when you're doing in data science, don't focus on low-hanging fruit. Make sure you have something to pick. But he said, solving the easy problems only deals with symptoms and not the cause. And as Michael points out, the best fruit is at the top, but don't spend all your time building a ladder to get up to it. These are some great suggestions for data scientists, but I think they're also apply to any field that's out there.
I like that this one ends on fruit picking, and we just talked about watermelons again.
Not my intention.
I mean, there's a fruit theme going on here, Warren. We're going to look for it in the rest of these articles. COTS, commercial off-the-shelf software, and open source. I think you want to put that in there, like he's also talking about, like use as much open source as you can digest.
And modular. Piecemeal.
Modularity and componentry and all the rest of that. So you can find this article under Essential Data Science Skills, or if you just typed in data science, you're going to get a lot of articles, but Essential Data Science Skills will get you this one. With that, we're going to turn to what I think we've had an article a week on this now, cloud costs. Basically, how do we manage our cloud costs? We talked a little bit about it at the top of the episode here. There are some tools though out there now that can help people optimize and manage and reduce their subscription costs, Warren. So what's out there?
Well, this is an article out of CIO Dive. It's called Four Types of Cost-Saving Tools for Cloud Optimization. And it's inputs from Tracy Wu at Forrester and Ed Anderson at Gartner. And the old adage is especially true. You can't monitor what you can't measure. Okay, and that's especially true for the cloud. Everything you do in the cloud from the day you migrate it to the day you bring it back house or move it to someplace else is going to cost. Unless you can track these costs, analyze these costs, and project what costs are going to be, you'll be facing a very, very slippery and expensive slope. And so cloud monitoring tools, based on this article, fall into four categories. Cloud governance. This ensures that employees are using the cloud as authorized by your cloud uses policies. And as a side note, if you don't have a cloud uses policy, that's a whole nother issue. And remember, governance is about policies. Compliance is about the law. Cloud cost management. This allows IT leaders to know how much is being spent on cloud every single month. There's another one called cloud optimization. And this lets companies know that their costs are aligning with the resources they're needed versus their expenditures. And he pointed out, he says, if you've got a project and you've forgotten about it, it's still racking up dollars. So make sure that you're optimizing your cloud usage. And then the last thing is cloud forecasting. That predicts future usage and allows for leveraging prepaid options. You can go to any of the cloud services, and if you prepay for something based on your usage, you can certainly cut your costs a little bit. So it, regardless of the cloud usage, you need to have these tools in these four areas and be particularly good at the tool usage. And he said, that's why it's particularly important to have a cloud expert on your team that's familiar with these tools.
Right. So these are all cloud monitoring tools or areas in which cloud monitoring tools can provide help, right? Governance, cost management, optimizing your spend and usage, and forecasting or capacity planning, as we called it in the day, of what's coming up. But one of the things with monitoring too ties back to the article you started with, which is how do we know we're measuring the right things? We're still talking about watermelons here. Certainly with a cloud, you can monitor the things that cost you money more directly. But I always wonder if those are really correlated to either your business or what actually costs the service provider to provide or if they're just going on a right angle and making the money and you're just opening your wallet up. Okay.
Yep.
So interesting. Cloud monitoring, there's probably a lot of expertise now that goes into those four areas. Keyword for that, by the way, cloud tools. Cloud tools, you're going to get this and maybe one or two other articles. If you type in cloud, of course, Warren, what are you going to get?
About 1,700 articles.
15,000 articles, I would say.
Exactly. We're getting close to 18,000 articles out there on our repository.
That repository just keeps getting deeper and deeper. Those of you interested in mining that repository, there is an API available from IT Weekly Newsletter if you'd like to integrate that with your website or research tools or DevOps tools or whatever else you've got out there. So,
yep.
There are more ways to think about spending money and tightening budgets, Warren. One of them is the IT audit. This time of year, people are doing their budgets, but they're also auditing what's gone on. There's spot audits, there's emergency audits, there are audits when things go wrong. But there's also some ways people can use audits to be more proactive and to do things better. So does the word audit always strike fear into somebody when they hear it?
I think it does. It's like it's a terrible. It's like when I get my annual physical and they have to check the prostate exam, right? It strikes fear, but I know it's helpful. And I think audits have the same visceral feeling as an annual performance. When your review comes in and says, Warren, we're going to do your annual review tomorrow. It doesn't matter. You sort of get this gut feeling. But I think audits, that's what this article points out, can be the one thing that can actually make your IT department better if you go into it with the right attitude. For example, gap analysis. An audit can find those areas that are lacking. For example, security area. Here's an area that you may want to fix. Best practices. For example, the use of artificial intelligence and robotic process automation for new approaches. Bot consulting. If you've got a weak area, they can provide a consultant that can help that out. They can also provide insight into seminars and courses from an educational standpoint that can strengthen the IT department. Pre-deployment reviews. They ensure that your current policies and procedures can support a new technology or a new compliance law, for example. Vendor recommendations. They can check to ensure your vendors are compliant with industry standards. Policy review. They can take a look at your policies. For example, we talked about a cloud usage policy. Make sure that that's up to date and maybe even suggest new policies. For example, working from home and what's the appropriate use for that. Documentation review. That's especially useful for disaster recovery, business continuity. And then other user areas, shadow IT, consultant reviews, edge computing. And they say, and basically the bottom line is don't have a lot of anxiety over an audit. It actually can help your IT department become better. So don't be afraid of it. I'm not saying you have to jump up and down to it, but have the right attitude when you see an audit coming into the company.
Which is interesting because most people think of an audit as being done by an outside team or a third party team. There's no reason why you can't have members of your team designated to conduct an audit, like an inventory or something like that. There's no reason you couldn't certify someone in security and have them do an internal audit. And I do know that if you want to go upstairs to the big cheeses and get some project or initiative funded, holding some kind of audit in your hand that looks official will get you pretty far. Even if you wrote up that audit process and conducted the audit yourself.
Yeah, I would tend to disagree with you, Mike. I think you can't have somebody inside the company do an audit, okay? Maybe it's another department or something, but if you have an IT security guy do the IT security audit, yeah, I'm not sure they're going to be totally objective. It's like having an SEC audit every year. You've got to have an independent third party take a look at it.
I was just trying to put a better spin on it, right? So you could do think of it as audit practice to have an internal person do it while you have an external agency come in and do that. Certainly,
that's true.
Zero trust, I think, is what I'm hearing from you, Warren.
Yep.
Zero trust. You got to bring in a third party for that truth.
I'm seeing that every single day. So, yep.
All right. You've got along another article here, which is on one of your favorite topics, I know, which is RPA or robotic process automation. I know you're a big fan of RPA. Is RPA still going to be the panacea for all business ill here?
Well, it's an article out of CIO. It's called 6 Hidden Risks of IT Automation. And RPA is almost the technology du jour these days. And CEOs are reading about it. And then they're saying, okay, you know, Mike, I want you to implement an RPA project. Well, it's like, you know, RPA is like speeding in the rain. It may not be the safest and quickest way to get to your destination. Slow down, and remember these areas. You have to automate a process first. If you've got a bad process and you automate it, all it's going to do is get you bad results a lot faster. And when you're doing an RPA project, don't use the line, "We've always done it this way." Evaluate everything and come up with some new ideas. Do not become complacent with RPA. RPA is not an install it and forget it. For example, autopilots. You've got pilots in an airplane using an autopilot, robotic process automation, but they watch it like a hawk and they make modifications all the time. Poor communications, before, during, and after. Make sure that all the stakeholders are reading from the same script. They have the same vocabulary. They have the same time frame. They have the same budget. Good communications. And he said also, sometimes RP is not a good fit. He said, for example, if you're doing payment approvals, you don't want to have an RPA in there. You want to have somebody actually looking at that payment and approving it. And also, never assume that just because you do an RPA project that the end users are going to adapt to it. Make sure that everybody knows what's going on. The project managers are talking to the actual end users. And he says, don't overlook ease of use. Regardless of the intent, if your end users aren't using it, it's not a good fit. So yeah, RPA is a wonderful tool if thought through, applied correctly, and then updated on a regular basis. So take a look at it.
Right. And if you automate the wrong process, you're just going to get wronger faster. You got to have a little bit of zero trust again, even with your automation, and go back and double check it. Maybe do an audit, internal or external, one way or the other. You can be doing audits on your automation, right? I'm going to tie it all together, Warren. This is just
okay.
Together, no master plan. Look up the keyword RPA fit if you want this article. If you just look up RPA itself, you're going to get 76 articles already. So there's a lot of stuff out there on robotic process automation if you think that is something you need to dive into a little bit deeper. Now, your last article here, because recently was Veterans Day, right? And I was in the Air Force, Warren, for a number of years. I was ROTC in college and served overseas in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. So proud veteran of a foreign war and everything like that. And I know that coming back can be hard to reintegrate out of this armed services into the high tech industry, especially. But there's a lot of high tech now in a lot of the armed services.
And you bet. Yep.
We're with technology. Yep. But I think the more important thing than looking for hard skills is the soft skills. And I hate to use the word soft in this case, I'll have more comments later. But this article is talking about why you should maybe look to hire vets to fill some of these security jobs.
Yep. It's an article out of Cybersecurity News. It's called Agility, Teamwork, Mission Focus, Why Companies Look to Vets to Fill Cyber Job Gaps. And one of the featured contributors is Gary McCollum, who's a 25-year veteran of the Air Force, and he's now currently the CSO over at USAA. Mike, I know you were in the Air Force. I served in the Navy during the Vietnam era. My dad was a retired master sergeant at the Air Force. As a young boy, I lived on military bases almost my entire up through high school. So I have a special place for anybody that served. And you and I both know that vets are terrific people with a set of skills that are extremely important in the security area. And all the years that I was a hiring manager, I had tried to hire persons with soft skills and not necessarily the hard skills. They're important, but Mike, you can't teach somebody to show up on time. You can't teach somebody to be honest. You can't teach them to stay calm. You can't teach them to work well in a team environment. And you can teach hard skills, but you can't teach soft skills. And vets have two skill sets that I think are extremely important in the security area. Number one, they're good in a team. No one is an island, and security needs people to work together quickly and efficiently. Basic training, when I was in boot camp, we had to row a boat across like 75 yards, and we were all over the place. 11 weeks later, as a team, we could literally have pulled a water skier out of the water working together. So teamwork is very important. But also, I think one of the things that you see for military vets is they're trained to stay calm. I mean, we had a lot of fire damage control training, fighting fires, things along those lines. So you've got to be able to work efficiently under stressful conditions. Vets, they tend to stay calm, think quickly. And once something has been decided, they tend to act on it. And I'm just saying that just because a vet doesn't have the necessary hard skills, don't pass them over. Look at those soft skills that are so important. And I have a special place for military vets in my heart.
I couldn't agree more with some of this advice. I just don't know about using the word soft, because it's not quite to me what some of that is. When you get someone who's coming out of the armed forces, they have extremely high integrity. they'll go the distance, as you're saying. They're going to work hard towards your objectives and apply a lot of creative thinking to get there. They generally are always thinking about making sure they do it the right way, not necessarily also getting it done right. There's a right and wrong way for a veteran who's been in the military to do something. You do it the wrong way, you blow up. So you do things the right way and get there. And particularly with tech skills, I think you find that vets tend to learn fast.
They do.
Fast and under fire. I like that, working well under stressful conditions. So.
Yep. And I don't want to make the blanket assumption that every vet is a perfect fit. I'm just saying that when you see the word vet, don't just dismiss them right off the bat. Give them a chance. Right.
Well, certainly don't be scrubbing a vet's resume for, you know, the particular technologies that you have under the cover, because they will pick those up, like no doubt, which is probably the biggest lesson, is what you're hiring here is somebody much more valuable than a particular technology in most cases. Now, that was our 6 for 10. How many articles did you get posted this week on the weekly newsletter website?
We tend to publish somewhere between 8 to 13. For some reason, just personally, if I see less than 10, I'm very unhappy. So I struggle to find 8 to 13 good technical articles. So that grows out of 5. So maybe somewhere between 40 and 75 articles every single week. Just go out to our website, www.itweeklynewsletter.com. There's a little box there that says, what's what in the last 24 hours? You click on that and you'll see the last 8 to 13 articles we picked. Right underneath that is a search box. You can put in, for example, 5G, if you're happening to do that, or whatever word you want to use, and we'll search. I think we're up to like 17,700 articles altogether that are indexed by title and also by keyword. So www.itweeklynewsletter.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. You can put my name in, send me a message, but check the weekly newsletter every single day. And I know it's a weekly newsletter and I'm doing it daily, but I've had the name for 20 years. I'm not going to get rid of it. So,
well, we're going to come back around, because that, you know, we're going to have a weekly product. I'm sure we're going to have a newsletter product. You're going to have all sorts of things coming back and forth. Soon we're going to have these implanted jacks in the back of our head, and we'll still be getting the IT weekly newsletter fed right neurally to our brains, I'm sure.
It is. And Mike, I'm passionate about the newsletter, and all the years I was in sales, I used to get these newsletters all the time, and they're really just marketing hype items. I go through and I curate the massive information out there to provide you with information in terms of helping you do your job better. I don't cover companies. I don't cover products. I don't cover press releases. It's just good, solid information that's going to help you there.
And that's great. Which brings us to our audience question of the week. What does IT metaphorically, there's a big word, Warren.
Don't do those big words for me, Mike. I got to get my dictionary every time I do this podcast.
What does IT look like to you in terms of objects or analogies, like the watermelon one we started the episode with? You know, you could talk about things looking like an elephant, but people only seeing parts of it. How have you described IT to people who need a metaphor? This could be an interesting philosophical level question. And in particular, are there any situations in which you were looking at things one way, but your users or end users or even management were seeing it very differently? In other words, you're using kind of different colored lenses to look at the same thing in IT. If you've got an answer to that or want to provide some input, go to the smallworldbigdata.com website under the Tech Top 6 webcast page. You'll find a contact form. If you fill that out, it'll come directly to us, the cast and crew here, and we will certainly give it a good read. You also subscribe at that page. That's, again, smallworldbigdata.com, the Tech Top 6 podcast page. You can subscribe to all the major podcast subscription services there. And if you are a subscriber, give us a good rating if you like the show and help others find us. We'd appreciate that greatly. Finally, Warren, it's planning season for 2021 budgets. Custom marketing content for content marketing is a kind of a smart idea, right? And we have a focused audience here on the Tech Top 6. Yep. And podcasts just like this one reach that targeted audience directly. I don't know, Warren, I guess I'm just saying, if there's anybody out there that wants to reach that kind of audience, we've got an ability for you to sponsor us, and we can even help you get your own bespoke tech geeky targeted podcast idea brought to life if you have one.
Yep. If you've got some marketing development funds that are running out to the end of the year and you need our help either with an interview or a special sponsorship, let us know and we'll help you out there.
I will definitely help you out there. Well, Warren, you know, enjoy the crisp fall nights.
Yep, you got it. And Mike, until our next podcast, as always, I truly enjoy talking to you. You take care of yourself. Stay safe.
All right, take care.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.